May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer.
Amen. Amen.
We read the Bible publicly in worship here, and we follow a predetermined structure called a lectionary. And lectionaries have been around for a long time. It actually goes all the way back to the synagogue in Judaism, predetermined sets of the Bible being read in worship. And this week, the gospel reading, I don't know if anyone was noticing the chapter and verse count on the gospel, but we're missing some stuff in there. Did anyone notice that? Say you did. Say, of course, preacher. Yeah, right, totally. So if you look at the chapter and verse count, this is all Mark chapter 6, and we go verse 30 to 34, and then there's almost a 20-verse gap, and then 53 through 56. So what's missing in the middle are these two really famous stories. One is Jesus feeding of the 5,000. One is Jesus walking on water. And these are great stories, and they're easy to preach, but I wasn't given those. I was given these other verses to preach, and so I got some advice from a wise friend that said, just do what Bishop Curry does and preach whatever you want. And I thought, maybe that's a good idea. But I thought, okay, now what if I double down on these texts and figured out what's in them? And of course, something new crops up. A detail that actually is often obscured by these really famous stories that you want to grab and read. And so to talk about that, I want to talk about this. Tell me if you've ever had this experience. You're running late. You know who you are. You're running late, and you've got one more errand to run before you get where you're supposed to go. So I've got to pick up that thing at the grocery store. I got to get that birthday card before the party. I'm out of gas. I've got to get, you know. There's one more errand that you've got to run, and you're on your way. You're already behind, and you're heading into wherever you're going, and then someone approaches you. Excuse me, could you help me out for a second? I need some money for the bus. And someone comes and just approaches you and kind of panhandles you. Have you ever had this happen? Okay. What about this? It's the end of the workday and you are spent. You have given everything you had. You are cooked. You're exhausted. You've got nothing left. Maybe it's school. You're at the end of the school day. You're tired. And you walk in the front door to your house, and instead of your children coming to you and greeting you, they approach you and they want you to be a referee. Dad! He did this to me. No, no, she did this to me. Tell her she's wrong. Tell him he's wrong. And all of a sudden, they're fighting in your face. Or you're just completely done, and they approach you because we've got this big math project that's due tomorrow, and you just feel light and free. Or maybe you're out with some friends, and you're at the point where it's time to eat, and you're hungry. But you've got that one friend that just will not stop talking to people at the party so you can go eat. Do you know who this is? It might be you. And so your hunger turns to anger. Do people at least recognize one of these places? Okay, now let me ask you this. Does that bring out your best or your worst? Worst. It brings out my worst. I am a mess, and don't ask my children because they'll tell you stories. But I'll lose my temper, I'll be gruff with someone, I'll be rude all day long, twice on Sunday. Which is why the gospel today is the worst for me, because it's a similar situation that Jesus and his disciples are in. They've been ministering to people. Jesus has sent his followers out to do what he called them to do. And they've been healing people, they've been teaching, and they come back and the text says they're just wiped out. In fact, they're so beleaguered by the need around them that they don't even have time to eat. They can't even get themselves a meal. And so Jesus says, look, get in the boat and just go across the lake and get some rest. I mean, good heavens, you deserve it. And we all know that feeling. And so what happens, though, is that Jesus is famous. And his disciples are famous. People know that they heal people. And so what happens is all these folks see Jesus and his disciples crossing the lake over here this way. And so they start to run around the edge of the bank of the sea to meet him on the far side so that when Jesus and his disciples arrive, all of the need has come to meet them. And there is no rest. There's only more need. And Jesus loses his temper. Jesus yells at them inappropriately. No. He recognized that they were like sheep without a shepherd. He saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them. Come on, Jesus! How am I supposed to? That's not what I do. When my chips are down, when I've got the friend that won't get off the phone to go eat, when my kids are fussing at me and I'm tired, when I get approached by somebody and I'm in a hurry and I just don't have time for it, compassion is not my reflex. Is it yours? No. But it's Jesus's. There's something about his inner life where the response is this sort of compassion. Now, be clear. Compassion in the Bible isn't pity. It's not just feeling sorry for someone. That poor old John Shields. Don't you just, I mean, really? It's not that. Compassion is, it's a gut kind of physical response. It's a little earthy, actually, in how it's described in the Greek text. The splagnon is what it's called. And it's really about this kind of openness at the seat of your being toward another. Are you open? Are you closed? And there's an openness that Jesus has, even in the face of this kind of exhaustion. And so I don't know about you, I really, this week, I read the text and thought, that's an interesting detail, but I get an F+ in compassion. I can't do that. I really think that I probably just have too many problems. Like, I'm too broken to have compassion. And so, help me, Jesus, I guess, but what am I going to do? Actually, it's that very brokenness, my very problems, that are the key to unlocking and beginning this inner life of compassion. Krista Tippett is a journalist, an all-around nice lady, and she has a show on NPR called On Being. I don't know if any of you listen to it or have seen it. It's wonderful. But she did a piece on compassion a few years back, and in talking about it, she calls it a spiritual technology, compassion, which is interesting in its own right. And then she says this. She says, our culture is obsessed with perfection and with hiding problems. But the liberating thing to realize is that our problems, in fact, are probably our richest source of rising to this ultimate virtue of compassion. They are what bring us toward compassion because they move us toward the suffering and the joys of others. Our problems are our richest source of rising to the virtue of compassion. They're not what keep us from it. They're the things that help us. This gets obscured by our culture of perfection, but that's how it works. So if I may borrow a metaphor from someone else, let me put it this way. It's kind of like a backpack. Everybody's got backpacks, right? You guys know about backpacks, right? We know backpacks, and we have backpacks, but what happens in this backpack metaphor is that every time someone wrongs us, we sustain abuse, bankruptcy, the business failed, the money ran out, there was a divorce, there's been even just like the cold shoulder. Every time something happens and we're wounded, it's like something else goes in the backpack. And it gets heavier and heavier, doesn't it? And we put it on and we walk around, but what we're walking around with are all of these wounds, and we're carrying them. And the more of them there are, the heavier it gets. And they make us tired, and they make us weary. And when we feel it, they weigh us down. We feel like we're moving slower because of it. Does everyone know the backpack? And so you've got this backpack that you're carrying. And it's not pleasant and it's not fun, but it's there. And you wonder what to do with it until you take it off one day and you open it up and you look at what's in there. Oh, there's water in a backpack. That's pretty good. There's food in a backpack. All right. Oh yeah, there's things like a flashlight in a backpack. Right? So all these things. There are things in this backpack that other people need for their journey. There are things in this backpack that would help someone else go the distance. And so the way that it works is that the things that we carry in our backpacks, if we open it up and we look at them and we name what they are, this happened to me. This was when the business failed. This is when she took the money and ran. This is when that abuse happened to me. We name it. We say what it is, and we invite Jesus into it. It's not just calling it what it is, but it's also saying, now Jesus, you come into this space. What happens is, strangely, we will run into somebody else that's been through the exact same thing. You go through the worst divorce you could possibly imagine, but you invited Jesus into it, and something started to change in you. And then it could even be the next day you run into someone else that's been through the exact same thing. And you look at them and you say, me too. As Ann Lamont says, it's the most powerful sermon you'll ever hear. Me too. That happened to me, and guess what? I'm not all better yet, but I'm still here. This won't be the end of you. And you know what happens at that moment? The very thing that you've been carrying around in your backpack that's weighing you down the most, that's the hardest, and makes you the most weary, it becomes the channel through which God's healing love flows to somebody else. Boom! That's how it works. How cool is that? That's not how it seems like it works, but that's how it goes. That's the way things are. The things that we carry around and that have hurt us the most and wounded us the most are the very place that our compassion can begin. We invite the Lord into it. We start to name it and look at it, and we're not afraid of it. You will start running into people that have been through the same thing, and God will say, tell them your story, and their healing will begin too. And I see enough people nodding their heads that some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. So here's the invitation for this sermon. What's in your backpack? What are the things that you're carrying around that are weighing you down, that you've been repressing for years? If I just pretend that it didn't happen, it'll go away. No, it doesn't. There's a secret life. I'm just trying to keep it big. Just don't try that anymore. If I could just ignore it long enough, I'll be all right. You don't have to. But if people knew that about me, they would know I'm not perfect. Great. It's wonderful. What's in your backpack that needs to be looked at, that needs to be examined, that needs to be seen for what it is and called what it is? And then just start paying attention to the kind of people that God brings into your orbit. Because very much like that group of folks that ran around the edge of the lake to meet Jesus on the far side, you are going to find people, you're just going to start running into people. God is going to steer people your way that have been through the exact same thing. And if you've taken a look in your backpack and you've started thinking about it and you've started working it through, you're going to effortlessly be able to say, me too. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to even like them. But you can say, me too. And this river of living water will flow out of you to them, and you will participate through your pain in the healing of the world. That is good news. Amen.
Amen.